This show is supported by State Farm. You have insurance for your home, your health, and your car. Why don't you have insurance for your small business? So many small business owners think they don't need or don't even know about small business insurance. Protecting a source of revenue is one thing, but so is protecting all of your hard work and your team members. State Farm agents are all small business owners too, so they know how to help small business owners choose personalized policies that fit their budgets. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hi, it's Amy Newmark with three of my favorite episodes for you this Thanksgiving week. I know you'll be inspired and entertained by them, and I'll be back next week with more stories from our new books.
This show is supported by State Farm. Insurance is a part of any solid financial plan. Making sure you have the important things in life covered is one of the best ways to give yourself a little breathing room when things go awry. It's important to protect not only your business, but yourself as a business owner and all current and future team members. State Farm agents know what it takes to run and protect a small business because State Farm agents are all small business owners and they live and work in your community. So they're deeply attuned to what's happening with other small businesses in your market. If you have a small business and are interested in making sure you're protected, reach out to your local State Farm agent to learn more about what you need. They'll help you find the right policy at the right price for your business. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Changing your life one story at a time. This is the Chicken Soup for the Soul podcast with Editor-in-Chief Amy Newmark.
Hey, it's Amy Newmark, and I'm here today with Dr. Randy Nelson, who actually has an MBA and a medical degree. It's Friend Friday, and that's when I introduce you to an interesting person. Randy is one of our writers in our new book, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Step Outside Your Comfort Zone. And we're actually here together on the floor of the National Association of Broadcasters Convention in New York City. Randy lives in New York, so she was nice enough to come and join me here on the floor. And we're both stepping outside our comfort zones today,
absolutely,
doing this interview here with people wandering around and looking at us, right?
Right.
It's a little bit strange. I think everybody can hear the crowd noise in the background. So, Randy, welcome so much to the Chicken Soup for the Soul podcast.
Thank you for having me. It's really great being here.
And thanks for joining the Chicken Soup for the Soul family. I know this is our first story from you that we've published. I hope we'll see many more from you.
Absolutely.
I'm sure you have a lot of great stories from being a pediatrician.
Yes.
So, Randy is actually a pediatrician who was a former investment banking accountant. So last Friday, I talked to Wendy Walker, and she was the child of firstborn Americans, mm-hmm, and you're the child of immigrants, and that creates a certain set of expectations in many families.
Right. Okay. So my parents are Jamaican, the island of Jamaica, and I'm a first-generation American. I was born in Brooklyn, New York, many years ago. And, you know, they're just typical, you know, like West Indian parents, you know, had high expectation of my brother and myself. You know, we were expected to go to college, do well in school, work hard. They instilled very strong work ethics in both of us. And so, you know, I guess we're just like our parents' dream.
Yeah, so what did you do first? How did you first fulfill your parents' dream?
Well, I attempted to do well in school, and when I was in high school thinking about college, you know, I had a desire to be a doctor. I did well enough in school, but I didn't have the confidence. There weren't many African-American doctors, I guess, in my circle. You know, it just seemed so far-fetched. It just didn't seem like a goal that I could attain. So I decided to do business, and I went to the University of Buffalo, upstate, and I majored in accounting, and I, you know, received my degree and started working on Wall Street.
So you were a huge success. What caused you to stop working in your successful job on Wall Street using your accounting degree and all of that?
Well, after 14 years, during that time period, I received the MBA from Hofstra. You know, I tried to do everything that I needed to do to become a successful accountant. But in 2000, my father passed away. So that kind of changes your perspective on, you know, I guess, life. You know, at that point, I'm 30. I'm kind of really thinking about my future. I've always been ambitious. I've always, you know, wanted to do well in this, you know, in my career. I also like to have fun, but, you know, my career, my life's purpose was very important to me. So my father died in 2000, changed my perspective a little, you know, somewhat. But then September
9/11 occurred,
yeah,
right.
Occurred, and that really took me for a loop. I mean,
now, did you work down near the World Trade Center?
I worked for Citigroup. I worked really just 3 or 4 blocks from the Trade Center. So I witnessed everything and, you know, ran for my life while the buildings were tumbling and, you know, just the whole confusion of that day. And, you know, a couple of weeks later when I returned to work, you know, seeing the destruction and, again, another life-changing, altering event that made me rethink about what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. You know, we used to work hard in investment banking. I, you know, work on holidays, work weekends, work to 1 o'clock in the morning. So I used to say, hey, if I'm going to do put this time in, especially away from my family and my friends, let it be for something I felt that was worth it.
Mm-hmm.
So I revisited my dream to become a doctor and...
That's incredible. After all those years and being successful on Wall Street and getting your MBA, so then did you have to go back and take pre-med classes?
I did. I had to take prerequisites. There were a couple of, there were 8 required courses that I had to take. So I took those while I was working as a vice president
at
Citigroup. But somehow I managed to do it and get, like, A's. And I had to sit for the MCAT, which is entrance exam, and interviewed, and I landed at Stony Brook Medical University.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
I know my daughter went to med school.
Right,
I watched her take
yes.
the MCATs.
Yes.
You know, I
so
watched
you know.
The whole thing.
So
oh, my
know.
Gosh, I know. And it's perilous.
Yes.
You could prepare and prepare and prepare, and you could not get into
right.
med school, or you could not match into residency.
Right,
so
exactly.
you're taking a big risk when,
it's
you,
a huge
when
risk.
You go down that path.
It's a huge risk.
So then you got into med school. Did you quit your job on Wall Street? Well, you had to quit your job,
I had
right?
to quit.
And go to med school full time.
Yes, I had to quit because I had to attend medical school full time. So I saved and got my business in order, and I started August 2005.
Wow. And then where did you do your residency after med school?
I did my residency at Jacoby Medical Center in the Bronx. I
was. Oh, boy, that's a tough place to be. Wow.
Well, I really wanted to learn bread and butter, pediatrics. I knew the population that I wanted to serve, and I just wanted to make sure I was an expert and be able to serve, you know, my patients
right.
the best way. So that's why, you know, I chose that residency.
And now you're a pediatrician
yes.
in Brooklyn
yes.
serving an at-risk
yes.
population.
Underserved, yes. Very underserved. Shelter,
underserved.
Homeless, like families, children of homeless families and shelter families.
Wow. That is really something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That really is.
I love it. It's hard, but I really love what I do, and I do not regret making that switch so many years ago.
I'm thinking about, I was on the street a couple of months ago in Manhattan, and this woman came up to me, and she had 2 babies with her. I smiled at her. I smiled at her kids.
Mm-hmm.
She smiled back at me. And then she asked me for money.
Uh-huh.
And she said she was in a shelter. And I was so shocked. I didn't know what to do. And then she disappeared. And then I felt horrible
mm-hmm.
because I was on my way to Starbucks. And I went back outside. I looked for her everywhere because I was going to take her to Starbucks and buy her and
right.
her kids
yes.
some food and coffee and everything.
Right.
And I felt horrible that I hadn't done anything for this poor mother. And it's... One of the things we address in our book, Step Outside Your Comfort Zone, which is when you have those inclinations, those impulses to help somebody, don't stop. Just do it.
Do it.
Do it immediately.
Yes.
Nobody's ever going to be mad
yes.
at you for doing it. I still feel horrible about
right.
not having helped this lady. And I'm sure you see patients like her children all the time.
Yeah. I mean, my goal as a pediatrician, I believe that everyone deserves great medical care.
I agree with you.
I don't care if you are children of a CEO or you're a child of, if you live in a shelter, you deserve the best. So I really try to serve them at the best of my ability to top, you know, just do right by them because that's what they deserve.
Wow, it must be so hard for those mothers just to get their children to you. I mean, everything is so difficult when you don't have any money, you don't have any transportation, you don't have any child care, you're dragging your kids around with you. I mean, just to take your child to the doctor is a major undertaking for these people.
Yeah, it's the population I serve is different from, say, like a middle-class family that has a car that can take their children to the doctor as scheduled. There is a lot of socioeconomic barriers that we have to overcome. I work for a great organization that assists in helping our patients, you know, come, you know, get to our clinic. We try.
I know you work for Brightpoint Health. Mm-hmm. And then do you ever go to the shelters or to the at-risk people and treat them where they are?
No, they have to come to you. They come to our clinic, yeah.
Wow. Well, you must go home every day feeling very fulfilled, but also I guess you're carrying around a lot of trouble. How do you separate your patients' troubles from your life so that you can go home and be happy and not be carrying their burdens along with you each night?
Well, I'm very good at compartmentalizing. I'm not that I'm cold and I just shut off. That's new. I think about my patients all the time. But you have to have a healthy set of boundaries so that you can, you know, live your life, have your fun, not feel guilty. You know, what I love, one things that I really do love about my job and, you know, the role that I play in is that, you know, I'm from the same neighborhood that I work in. Mm-hmm. So, and I tell my patients that I'm like, look, I'm from Brooklyn. I grew up in Crown Heights, and I'm just like you. You know, I may not have lived in a shelter or been homeless, but, you know, I'm just like you. And you know, if I can do it, you can do it too.
You're a great role model for all those kids, especially those little girls.
Right, exactly. And I have one patient who, you know, after our discussion, started college last month. So,
oh, that's great.
Yeah, that's the best thing.
And how do we get the doctors to go back to the underserved neighborhoods? I mean, is that a problem where doctors who come from underserved neighborhoods might say, well, I think I'm going to go practice on Park Avenue now or something?
I mean, there's a lot going on in medicine right now. You know, it's very expensive to obtain a medical degree. You know, if you just do a straight numbers thing, like primary care physicians like myself, in terms of the salaries we receive, we're like kind of at the bottom of the barrel.
Right, I know.
We're still doing well, but in terms of the loans that we have, you know, some people have loans up to about $200,000-$300,000. And if you have a salary that's not like in that range, it's kind of hard.
And residents only make like $50,000 a year after they get out of medical school, and then they're making $50,000 a year for at least 4 years, if not longer. Now, I know in family medicine, they're trying to shorten med school, I think. I think my daughter's med school, Brown, instituted a new program where it's you can go for 3 years and get your MD for family medicine.
Oh, I'm not aware of that.
So that at least that's one less year of loans.
Right. So that's, you know, that's a driving force for a lot of, you know, doctors. You just have to sometimes think that way. I'm of the thought that do what you love and the money will follow. So that's kind of the premise that I'm going by.
So what advice would you give to our listeners who are a little afraid to do something but kind of feel they should do something? How would you get somebody to step outside his or her comfort zone and do that thing that he or she is thinking about?
You know, this sounds cliche and it sounds boring, but you really have to believe in yourself. And you just have to believe that everything is going to work out for the best. Like, you have to believe. If you don't believe that, it's going to be hard. Trust me, medical school was difficult.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
It was extremely difficult. It was not easy at all. I shed a lot of tears, pulled out my hair plenty of times. It wasn't easy. Residency wasn't easy. So, but you have to, you know, but at the end of the day, you know, I saw myself practicing, you know, serving the patients that I wanted to serve, and it's happening. So you got to have that, you know, faith,
that
you
vision.
Have to believe. You have to
see the end and say, okay, I am doing all of this because I already see myself doing the thing I want to do at the end.
Absolutely. You have to do that and keep the naysayers kind of, you know, I didn't tell too many people initially what I was going to do because it sounded like so crazy.
Oh, just like Wendy Walker in the interview last week. Right, you kept it quiet for a while.
Yes, you kept it quiet because, you know, even when I did say something, I got the, oh, are you crazy? You know, I was a vice president at Citigroup when I left. So
that
why is, you
that is kind of crazy. But I'm sure your father would be very proud if he could see you now.
Exactly.
Well, Randy, I want to thank you for joining us today. This was great.
Thank you for having me.
I apologize to any investment banking house that is losing an employee as a result of listening to this interview. But I want to thank everybody for listening to the Chicken Soup for the Soul podcast today. And please go to our website and check out this new book, Chicken Soup for the Soul, Step Outside Your Comfort Zone. Go to chickensoup.com, click on podcasts, and you'll see the book. And it's actually on sale now everywhere that books are sold, including Barnes & Noble, which we love because they host so many book signings for us, Books a Million, your local independent bookstore, Chapters Indigo stores, and Costco in Canada, all over the continent, Walmart, Rite Aid, Target, Kroger, Amazon, and wherever else books are sold. Come back Monday for more inspiration and some great tips for how to put more responsibility on the shoulders of your children and grandchildren, literally with a clothing budget. It worked for me, even when my kids were in middle school, and it will work for you.
Thanks to State Farm for supporting this show and helping our listeners protect their businesses and lives. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.